Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, welcome. Welcome back. Welcome to the Trampoline Hall podcast. We've been away for a few weeks, but now we are back. I am your host, Misha Globerman. Trampoline Hall, as you know, is a lecture series that takes place in a bar, usually in Toronto, although sometimes in other cities. People at Trampoline Hall give lectures on all kinds of subjects, with the one restriction being that they cannot lecture on subjects on which they are professionally expert. It cannot be their job to know the thing. After each lecture, we take questions from the audience. I take questions from the audience. This, of course, is the Trampoline Hall podcast, not the live show. You probably know that because you understand how reality works. But the way the podcast works is on each episode, we take one lecture from our archives. Some are old, some are new, some are both old and new. And we do it in little short seasons. So a few times a year, we do a 6-episode season. And now is the time of the year when we are doing that. For this season, Kate Bars has looked through the archive and chosen 6 amazing lectures for you to enjoy. If you like this, by the way, and you're in Toronto and it's not the COVID pandemic, you should come see the show. Get on our email list and you can do it. Oh, also, if you like the podcast, you can see the live show in Toronto when we're doing it. Also, if you're listening now during the pandemic, we've been doing online shows. You can get on our email list and get announcements about the online shows too. They're actually pretty cool, so you might want to come join up for that. But now is the time for this episode's podcast lecture. You might be wondering if it contains mature language, and the answer is it might. And now it is time for the lecturer. The topic is fighting, and the lecturer is Suzanne Cart. The topic is fighting, and the lecturer is Suzanne Cart.
Hello. I don't feel so bad now with the paper that I saw Misha like waving his around, because now I'm going to wave mine around for the next 8 minutes. So yes, I'm talking about fighting, but more specifically, in 1989, Vince McMahon announced that WWE was fake. Testifying in front of the New Jersey State Senate, McMahon, the World Wrestling Federation owner, was pressured to reveal that professional wrestling was scripted and in fact was entertainment and not sport. He did so as a strategic business move to avoid taxation, bureaucratic regulations through the State Athletic Commission, so that he wouldn't have to pay a levy that for the house shows or any of the pay-per-view events. It was an admission that changed the way in which the industry operated, but it really was not all that shocking. What was shocking, though, was that when it was uncovered as a charade, it did little to deter fans from investing in the character narratives and the fights themselves. This confession that all the outcomes were predetermined did nothing to damage the reputation of the organization, nor did it affect its mass popularity. This did change, it didn't change how professional wrestling was consumed, and the WWE was at the height of Hulkamania at the time and showed no signs at all of slowing down. Fans were able to suspend their disbelief, continue their love affair with wrestling, as my grandfather used to call it. But for Terry Jean Bollier and Hussein Khosrow Ali Vaziri, pro wrestling was really all too real. It is their life. WWE was not only determined their futures, but it fundamentally shaped who they are. These two men you might be more familiar with as Hulk Hogan and the Iron Sheik. These characters are the reality. Terry and Hussein no longer exist. There is only Hogan and Sheik. Their lives have been dictated by a kayfabian system. So kayfabe is a pro wrestling industry term. It's all about the dedication to truthiness. To be kayfabian is to portray all events within the business as completely factual. All of the wrestler storylines, moves, bad blood, fights are all to be represented as close to the truth as possible, not as staged or worked. Kayfabe rules that wrestlers stay in character during the show and in all public appearances in order to maintain the feeling of reality, albeit suspended amongst fans. The word kayfabe is thought to have originated as a carny slang for protecting the secrets of the business. It may ultimately originate for Pig Latin for fake, ekfe, or the phrase be fake, eBay ekfe. Another theory is that the term was yelled to signal trouble, and that kayfabe also may derive from another trick used by traveling carnival workers. With money tight, a carny would call home, collect, and ask for kayfabian. The receiver would then reject the call, but the message would already be sent. The code was letting people know it that they were at home, that they made it safe to the next town without having to pay for the cost of that phone call. So like a magician's code to never give up any trade secrets, so kayfabe has become the code that protects pro wrestling industry, maintaining the realness of the storylines. But there's deep consequences for breaking those codes, a tough lesson that the Iron Sheik discovered in 1987. Hussein immigrated to Minnesota from Tehran in the late 70s, where he was the bodyguard for the Shah and one of the top three champion military wrestlers in Iran. In America, he coached the U.S. Olympic wrestling team and began the amateur circuit. So pro wrestling at the time is not what we understand it to be today as the multi-billion dollar organization. But he was working under the management of Vern Gagnon. Hussein was perfect for the entertainment wrestling. He was an athlete that was in top physical condition. He had skills in the ring. He had developed a deep love and dedication to the sport. It was his life. He's once said to said that he felt married to the mat. It was his lover and it was his friend. Yet he wasn't progressing in the industry. It was Vern's wife that understood that Hussein wanted to go to the next level, that he would have to, and wanted to become more prominent in the business, he would have to find a very successful gimmick to make him a more recognizable character. She told him, well, you're Middle Eastern, why don't you make yourself a sheik? Thus, the Iron Sheik was born. He devised the character, taking cues from Middle Eastern stereotypes. He shaved his head, he grew a mustache, he dyed it black and his eyebrows, he grew it into this very impressive handlebar, which his wife to this day still dislikes. And he wore keffiyeh, which is a traditional headdress fashioned from a square scarf. And his finishing move was the camel clutch, which I will show anyone afterwards that would like to in the back. So he ranted at the audience in Farsi. He sang the Iranian anthem. He spit. He berated American ideals. The fans were completely irate. But they were feeding off the core anti-Iranian attitude the American and in America, and he transformed himself into the perfect villain. I'll ask you to remember at this time, too, when the Iron Sheik was devised, wrestling was still real. And as Jake the Snake describes it, whatever's going on in the world is magnified 100 times in wrestling. Therefore, the Iron Sheik character exploded in 1979 when the Iranian activists stormed the U.S. state's embassy in Tehran in retaliation for President Jimmy Carter putting the Shah in power and providing asylum for him in the U.S. during the Iranian Revolution. 52 of the embassy staff were taken as hostages, and all the events were heavily televised in the American public. This became real heat between the USA and Iran. Wrestling fans placed all of their fear, all of their anger onto the Sheik, thus transforming him into, still this day, the most powerful heel in the history of pro wrestling. Most popular narratives, there needs to be a good guy and a bad guy. In wrestling terminology, this is known as the baby face, or sometimes just the face, and the heel. As a bad guy, one that receives the bad guy is the one that receives heat from the audience. So heat is also a term that's used to describe the animosity that one can feel from the crowd. There's good heat and there's bad heat. So the good heat is where a fan loudly boos, and the bad heat is where it can get very violent and aggressive. The Iron Sheik garnered the latter in epic proportions. It was said that he needed to be taken out of the hotel by an ambulance, or taken out of the venue to the hotel by an ambulance to avoid angry mobs outside the event that actually wanted to kill him. Kayfabe lost him his safety and his mobility. But it all came to a crashing halt in 87 when the Sheik broke publicly. So he broke his character. En route to WrestleMania event in New Jersey, arch enemies, but still real life drinking buddies, the Iron Sheik and Jim Hacksaw Duggan grabbed a couple of beers and raced down the highway in the same vehicle to the event. So this was a huge transgression. To protect the business, heels and baby faces are never to be seen together, and they have to travel separately. When they were stopped by the police officer for speeding and drinking and driving, they were taken into custody. The Sheik was charged with possession of cocaine, but they were released in time, so that happened at 6 o'clock. By 8 o'clock that evening, they were both fighting in the main event. So they were released in time. They made it to Asbury Park, where they fought the main event as heated rivals. When the news broke the following day of their arrest, the illusion of the feud was shattered in seconds. The two men failed to maintain kayfabe. And when the media got a hold of these, in fact, that these two adversaries were associating as friends, it was all over. And fearing a dramatic drop in ticket revenue, McMahon publicly announced that both the Iron Sheik and Hacksaw Jim Duggan would never set foot in the WWE ring again, thus destroying Hassan's career. The Iron Sheik quickly went from performing in arenas of hundreds of thousands of screaming fans to local bars of maybe 100 people. So here's a man but in the end, he actually was the one who built the WWE empire for McMahon. Hulkamania would never have existed if it wasn't for the Iron Sheik, because he was the one that handed his belt to the All-American hero, Hogan. The Iron Sheik was the key in constructing the mythos of the biggest babyface of all time, that of Hulk Hogan. A championship belt can be won by clean wrestling, and clean wrestling is what happens when you pit two babyfaces together in a match. Without a heel, there's no animosity, and both have to obey the rules at all times, so you just have this very technical fight. You don't have a very thrilling fight, and so you always have to be able to overturn the bad guy to be the good guy. So Hogan needed to win this epic battle with the Sheik, yet in one kayfabian indiscretion, all his years of physical labor, loyal friendship were forgotten, and he was banished from the Federation. He lost more than just millions of dollars, he lost his identity. Where does Hassan Karzov Ali Vizier and the Iron end, and where does the Iron Sheik begin, or vice versa? After spending most of your life playing a character, do you actually become that character? Does Hassan exist anymore? Kayfabe has erased Hussein. And in fact, also his grandchildren call him Papa Sheik. So in recent years, the Iron Sheik has risen to fame again. The fear of the Middle Eastern man is not a hangover from the conflict in the 70s, but it's a continued and oppressive hatred that is fueled by racism. Islamophobia has changed the role of the Iron Sheik in contemporary America today. Coming out of a debilitating drug and alcohol addiction, the Iron Sheik has built a new career as a social media personality. This time, he has emerged not as a powerful heel, but as the clown. The Iron Sheik is developed by an industry and a nation ripe with racism, and not to even get involved with the misogyny and homophobia that exists in WWE. That's another presentation. With his catchphrase, "I'm gonna fuck your ass and make you humble," the Iron Sheik is, to a point where it doesn't even make sense. Now that it makes sense in the first place, but he just yells, fuck you, all the time into the thing. So, but that was the very, very first one that actually that was put on YouTube that now he has to, like a parrot, say over and over and over again. The Iron Sheik has rendered a joke, again, giving the American public what they need, a character to hate and ridicule, that of a scapegoat. So that, I would like to close with a question posed by the Hulkster himself. What you gonna do, brother, when Hulkamania runs wild all over you?
You're listening to the Trampoline Hall Podcast. I'm Misha Goldman. Up next, the Q&A.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Susan Cart.
Are there any questions? yes, you, sir.
Can you talk a bit about how you experienced wrestling growing up?
How did you experience wrestling growing up?
My father is a very physical man, and having two girls, we fought a lot. And with my dad, there was always the fake blood was involved. We were thrown around. Neighborhood kids would come over. Like, it was the way in which we were able to kind of become the boys that he never had. And so it became a very, it was an exciting thing for us to be able to participate in. And again, like those stories and those narratives and watching WrestleMania and going to WrestleManias as well. Like, the energy that's in that crowd is absolutely, like, fucking unbelievable and terrifying. The audiences are absolutely terrifying.
So you went to WrestleMania as a kid.
Yeah.
And that was that fun? Was it scary? Was it scary and fun? Was it?
No, it was fun then. Now when I look back, it's totally terrifying. And I had an event a couple of years ago with a friend, Matt, who was reffing with Samoa Joe. And I realized that actually when I looked out into the audience, it was like, these people terrify me, absolutely terrify me, because that heat, it just rises in the room, right, to a degree where you feel as though, like, yeah, that's actually, it doesn't feel safe.
Right, it's like the primary thing that wrestling doing is like riling up a mob. Like,
oh, yeah.
Other things might sort of accidentally rile up a mob, or like soccer, like accidentally riles up a mob or whatever,
yeah.
But wrestling, it's just like the only goal is to rile up a mob, right?
Oh,
it's,
yeah,
like, oh, good, we've riled up the mob.
Oh, yeah, and the Iron Sheik is fantastic at doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How old were you when you went as a kid?
I think I was probably around 8.
And it wasn't scary then?
Or no, what? No.
Okay.
No, because I didn't know
was
any
it,
better to
was
be scared.
Was it fun?
Oh, it is, yeah, it was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Yes, over there, yeah.
What would your wrestling
alter ego be?
I actually do have one. I wrestled for a bit. I'm the Fingernails of Justice.
It's such. All right. Wait, and you have one. You wrestle? Is that?
I did for a while. I'm not very good at it. I'm not good at the acrobatics, and I'm not good at being pretend to take a hit. I'd rather just be hit and then fake it. It feels
weird. That's a really specific preference.
Yeah.
Because, well, I would much rather pretend to be hit than be hit. And I feel I'm in the majority on that.
No, because everything tells you not to let your legs slip out from underneath you.
Okay.
So if someone just leg hits you and you all of a sudden have to dramatically react to that, you actually have to kick your legs out from underneath yourself. But again, like if someone really hits you, then you don't need
it's
to
easier
do that.
To, you don't have to do all that extra pretending.
Exactly.
You just fall over. Okay.
I do remember though in one match, a guy had picked me up and thrown me down, and when he came to grab my back again, I was like, no, Zeke, actually, I am in pain.
Yes.
Can you show us the camel clutch?
Can we see the camel clutch? Do you want to see the camel clutch?
It actually can be painful. I will warn you.
Well, okay, all right. But was it like, is it damaging or just painful?
You have to lay down.
Can I take my mic with me?
Yes.
All right, I want to be in touch with you guys. So I'm taking this.
So lay down on your belly.
Keeps me sick. Okay. Right, so if we were just saying, okay, all right.
So basically,
Yeah, that is actually painful.
Backbend some people, and then in like the epic fight with him and Hogan, there is one, because of course you know the back and forth, you can't just go in there and then the Sheik has to do something nasty or the heel has to do something nasty to get the good guy, the baby face, to fall at one point and look like he's almost gonna lose and then come back.
Yeah, I can see how that would be hard. Yeah, okay, back there. You have what? Did you have to practice the? The shirt rip.
There's
a
tiny tear at the top, so you don't have to do too much work at the beginning, because that would be really humiliating if I was like. Yeah.
I pictured you having like 8 different lectures that all ended with that, and you were like, I don't know, I could do a lecture about how clothing are shoddily manufactured nowadays, or I could do a lecture about how I outgrow certain things, or you're like, no, I'll go with wrestling.
But I used to do it a lot more. I once was I'm the former undefeated pillow fight champion of the world, and that was something I used to do before I entered the ring all the time.
What does defeat look like in a pillow fight?
Submission. Submission, either like just blows taken, suffocation, and just like in a KO or TKO.
And a TKO in pillow fighting would be a fine distinction. Is there like
if you move the foam, or when we used to use feathers, if you get it down, it can be like an anvil, if you can like spin it down to the end.
All right. Anything else? Anything else people want to know? Yes, all the way back. Yes, you, sir. How did your father use the fake blood? Thank you. I think that's the question in everyone's mind, is just fake blood.
Well, because what a lot of the wrestlers did was they cut their scalp at the top with these little fine cuts, so that you can't see it within the hairline, but as you know, like if you have a cut on your head, it bleeds profusely. And as soon as they started working and the blood was pumping, it actually, you could get a lot. But with the fake blood, it was just the old like catch up kind of situation.
Oh. And that was something you would do like in like your regular wrestling, you'd be like wrestling with your dad and
he'd throw us off the couch and he'd like smash his face.
And he'd like smash his head and like catch, and there'd be like ketchup coming down the side of his face. And you'd be like, would your response be like, yeah, we are so tough, we broke our dad's head? Or were you
that, and then after a little while it starts to smell and it's on everything, and then my mom would yell at us.
All right, cool. Anything else? Anything else people want to know? Yes, over there. Yeah, we're hanging on the edge. Yeah.
Do you think fighting makes you more or less aggressive?
Do you think fighting makes you more or less aggressive?
Good question. It actually, I would say less, and the only reason why is you would think it was because I have an outlet for it, but it's not actually. When I wasn't fighting, I would get drunk and like to pick fights. And now that I started to learn how to fight, I realized I don't know how to fight at all. And so you become a lot more calm, and it's about respect. I also do Muay Thai as well. I've been competing for a couple of years on that circuit, so I also know it's about respect. And so, it's all about respect, even with the guys at the WWE, with working with one another, they want to continue to, they want to go home at the end of the day. They want to be able to get up and train the next day. So they're not there to injure one another. They want to work together.
So you think like any fighting discipline ends up like teaching you kind of some sort of focus or respectfulness or something like that?
Yeah. And yeah, so, when someone if someone was to attack me in the subway, I'm still gonna just go for the crotch shot and run away. The end of the day is all you need.
So there you go, real life wrestling lesson.
Exactly.
All right. No further demonstrations are required. Anything else? Anything else you would like to know? Oh, yes, over there, yes.
Where can we see you fight?
Or can we see you fight?
I don't know if I am going to fight a game. My last fight was in Arizona in April, and I believe that it could potentially be my last one.
How come?
I need my head. I use it a lot.
Was it like a...
Yeah, like you get hit in the head every day, twice a day, for many hours, and you know, you have those lingering headaches that last for days, weeks, months, and then after a while you think, maybe I don't want to get hit in the head anymore.
Someone was like, one
no,
person
not my legs.
Like, one person supports your choice.
Exactly.
Everyone else is like, yeah, I kind of like to see her fight. everyone has a head, you know? I'm not sure what that logic was. So we don't know. So where you can see your fight is in Arizona in the past.
Sorry. But anything? Maybe I'll pick up another fighting sport.
Really? Would you consider like a...
I don't know.
How many have you done? Because you've done...
I just did the wrestling.
Wrestling.
The pillow fighting. And then Muay Thai. I did jiu-jitsu for a while as well.
Jiu-jitsu.
And did one cage fight, and then that was about it.
Why are you? Wow, do you have like a lot of? You have like a lot of fighting.
I love it.
It's amazing. Okay.
I love one.
I thought I had a question, but I realized I was just like, you have a lot of fighting. Yes, you sir.
You mentioned I didn't know that Vince McMahon admitted that it was fake. What year did you say?
That was in '89 in court.
In
he had
89.
To.
Okay. When did? Hulk Hogan had his back broken by, who was it, either the Giants or the Ultimate Warrior? What was that?
When did Hulk Hogan have his back broken, and by whom?
Because
I can't remember.
I remember when that happened, and I was a kid, and we were all like, this is so fake.
Because you were like, it seemed fake to you when that happened. So did anyone think it was real before they even?
Yeah.
So the question is, before he admitted it was real in '89, like in '87,
yeah.
Was like even you, as you were a child, and you were like, "This is clearly fake." Was there anyone who thought it was real?
I feel like people still believe it's real. I'm sure that there is a large group of individuals that are still there.
Most of the people in the front row seem to still
exactly.
think it's real. They're all nodding emphatically.
But a lot of the injuries are to give the fighters breaks. So it's worked into the narrative either because there's some contractual disagreement and it's the way in which McMahon can fuck them too. Because also thinking about Hulk Hogan and thinking about, you know, Andre the Giant, the Sheik, like any of the men that were coming out of that that era and that time, is that also, even though he created the Sheik visually, and they didn't write their characters, and you had to be that character. So not only does like Hussein doesn't exist anymore, but he is someone else. Like he's a puppet that's being written but he believes the Iron Sheik so much. So he's this weird caricature. Oh yeah, just the way that you would think with any, and also the large portion of the audience, especially in that time too, is a very working class group of people too that were watching it. So the fact that there was McMahon, who was the man, and everybody wanted to hate on him. That's why McMahon actually entered the ring for a while afterwards, because he realized that he was the heel. He was one of the better heels too, is because he had the ability to break contract with like Bret Hart, where he could, whatever he said in the ring went, and he could go back on promises or past agreements, because as soon as it was said, it was in the ring, it was reality. And everybody scrambled ahead of, like about that too.
There you go. Yes, yes, in the back, yes.
Yeah, so I'm wondering who awarded you the pillow fighting championship. Was it you, MindSpace, or was it some other lesser?
Who awards the pillow fighting championship?
It was the league itself.
The pillow fighting league?
Yeah.
Is that so the Canadian pillow fighting league or the pillow fighting league of Canada? Or are they the same? I'm assuming there's multiple ones. I don't know.
Same thing.
Okay.
But yeah, no, it was the league.
And it's a Canadian, a national league in Canada, is that right? Or is it a...
Yeah.
And, okay.
Yeah. We did... There is a belt.
There is a belt. Okay. Yeah. All right. There you go. So that... You just wanted to know if you were like, well, is there a belt? Is it real? Yes.
Yeah.
It's official. It's not some made-up thing.
Yeah.
There's a belt.
And they didn't give it to me. I took it from her.
Anything else? Any other questions? Yes, yes, you, ma'am.
Who writes the script?
Oh,
for WWE? A group of writers? I don't know any names. I can't give you any more information other than that. But I'm sure, again, like if they sit down with McMahon and with the characters and divide what's going to happen, too. But you start to see the UFC taking on the same kind of properties as that, because they understand that the entertainment is what keeps people around. Like for a number of years too, it's just like rubber match after rubber match after rubber match, because it was the only way that they were able to build any kind of character narrative without it getting too soap opera like, and so that it didn't look like entertainment. But again, like how many times have you wondered if they're fixed? There's so much money that's involved with them.
And in UFC and Ultimate Fighting.
Yeah, that if they take a dive for a paycheck.
Okay. So we don't know who writes. So the question of who writes it is writers.
Writers.
People. I just keep picturing like people like finishing like their MFA program or whatever.
This is
like,
great.
Oh, no, I thought, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Be like, okay.
I'm gonna fuck you in the ass and
yes,
humble.
Yeah, over there. Yeah. Someone wrote that.
I'm sure he wrote
like
that one.
They're sitting in the room. They're like trying things. Yeah. They're like, I'm gonna slap your face and make you humble. Now let's pump it up a little
pump
bit.
Pump it up a bit. Yeah.
Sorry, you had a question.
What's it like to be in a cage match?
What's it like to be in a cage match?
Scary. No, it actually wasn't that scary. It was fine. The only thing is that you're, which I didn't think of because I hadn't been in before, is that your toes get caught in the fence, and you're not able to grab the cage, but also my opponent was a little bit larger than I am, even though we do have weight differences. She came in heavier, and that made all the difference in the world, because as soon as she just puts your weight on you in the cage, which I'm not used to that, I'm used to a ring, so I can bounce myself off of a ring and move easier, but as soon as your back is on a cage, there's not much flexibility in that surface, which I was really shocked.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
You look like, I don't know if you can see, but you look like, oh my God, it really does answer my question. So the answer is, so don't go into a cage match with someone who's bigger than you if you haven't done a cage match before. That's your takeaway. Let's see, yes, back there, yeah. What are your feelings of the general sort of shift in popularity from WWE, from wrestling to UFC, to Ultimate Fighting?
I feel, again, like Dana White has the same McMahonian vibe about him. He seems like an asshole. And that he does do the same types of, like, yeah, the same strategies are employed. The way in which he really wants these different camps, like with the Ultimate Fighter reality series as well, and then that's how they're building their fighters. So there's a buy-in as well, if you've seen these individuals struggle. And then the same rhetoric is always like put over and again, that they have to be there to win, and that they, if they're any less dedicated, and they have to bleed for the sport and end up bleeding basically for him and for a paycheck. But the shift, I feel like it's starting to the same thing where it gets pretty boring after a while, and they need to do something to bring, and that's why they brought women back in, or not back in, why they brought women in the first place. Dana White said a woman would never set foot in the octagon, never, and he said that numerous times, and then he realized that his industry was getting really boring and didn't know what to do, and then brought in Rousey, and she killed it for years. And then he pinned all his hopes on her, but he was still that asshole that said that women would never enter. And then that's a whole other conversation, too, about watching women beat each other up in a cage match, too, where even I don't feel like the refs were completely prepared for it either, because there was a few stoppages that you would never see in a man's...
Stoppages...
When the ref feels like the woman or the person is not defending themselves properly,
right,
and then they call it a technical knockout and they stop the fight. Yeah, there was a fight where they shouldn't have done that.
So you think they stopped it too early?
Yeah, because I think that they were kind of appalled at watching one woman beat on another one so badly.
They were like, that's too much.
It's too much. We can't deal with that.
Popular media is like, that is too much violence against women. We are stopping it there.
Yeah.
They've never done that before.
Yeah, we can't deal with this.
Right, that's weird. They were like, it was too... Yeah. And you were like, that should have gone on because it would have been more...
It totally should have gone on.
Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Has your dad come to your matches?
No. No, doesn't like it at all.
He taught you.
And he hates it.
Really?
He really doesn't like it at all. No. No, I sheepishly don't even tell them when I have a fight coming up. I mention it very casually. Like, as I'm leaving Sunday dinner, oh yeah, I'm gonna be in Arizona next week.
And he doesn't like it because?
Because he doesn't want to see me hurt.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. I'm gonna go back to you back there, yes, in the middle of the room, yes, you, yeah.
Oh, I don't think it's full time, but you said you're not fighting anymore? Do you have any projects?
Do you have any other projects other than fighting? Now that you're not fighting.
I'm a curator. I work at a gallery. So I have those types of projects. I have work-related projects and that. But physical challenges, I don't know. I was like, I think I might like want to do triathlons. But triathlons where maybe we punch people in the face afterwards or something. I don't know.
I feel either of this.
Figure four leg lock.
Whether it's
get out of that and then touch that post.
All right, so maybe we'll look forward to seeing you in a triathlons where people punch each other in the face.
Maybe.
All right, we're wrapping up now. Ladies and gentlemen, Suzanne Cart, ladies and gentlemen.
Trampoline Hall was created in Toronto in the 21st century by Sheila Hetty and is hosted by me. This episode's lecture was chosen by Zenya Benevolsky. This podcast is produced by Josh Block. Our theme music was composed by Matt Smith. Our coordinating producer is Kate Bars. If you enjoyed the podcast, leave us a review on iTunes. It really helps a lot. I'm Misha Globerman. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.